her story could have been a source of inspiration for other people. But with this vulnerable sector check, her story is more like, if you mess up when you're younger, you might as well just give up, because it arbitrarily somebody could decide, no, we're going to put this down, and that means you can't be many, many different types of professions, and we'll decide if we want to take it off or not. And we don't really care that you're a straight-A student and you've got letters from the dean and you've got letters from your psychiatrist and you haven't done anything since 2009. We're going to put it on anyway.
Well, our first encounter really with the vulnerable sector check was in the summer of 2012. Our daughter was in nursing at university, and she'd already completed 3 years of a four-year degree. And each year, as part of her program, she had to have a vulnerable sector check done. No problems for the first 3 years. And then when she had one done between the third year and fourth year, it came back listed two police contacts of violent and aggressive nature dating back to 3 years previous to that. When we first saw that, we thought it had to be a mistake. And so we phoned up the police services that had done it, and they said, well, no, it wasn't a mistake, that they had recently changed the procedure, and that they were now going to start listing any police contact under the Mental Health Act. But they felt that the terms mental health could be discriminating. So instead of staying that, they were going to put down that it was violent and aggressive. So how does that affect it? Because they've changed the name of it, and to me, made it something much worse, like, you know, you're violent and aggressive.
It was a bit of a shock. I mean, she was doing great on the dean's list, everything. We were basically in a celebration mood. And then this came out of the clear blue, things from the past.
Well, the incidences had happened late in the summer of 2009. The first one, our daughter had gone out to a party with a group of friends. When it came time that she wanted to leave, the only person who said that they would drive her had a lot to drink, and she didn't feel it was safe to get in the car with them. So she thought, well, she would walk home, which she had done before. While she was walking home on her way, she was stopped by the local police. And they told her that she should not have been walking, that it was late at night, it was dangerous for her to be out on her own. And they said they felt she'd had too much to drink, and they wouldn't let her leave. So she felt very upset. She got a little bit agitated, I guess. She was upset. They wouldn't phone us. They put her in the car. She started feeling very nauseous, and at one point she told them that she felt so sick to her stomach, she said she wished she was dead. And when she said that, they phoned us, and they told us that since she had said she wished she was dead, that they were going to take her up to the hospital to be examined, that they were going to take her up under the Mental Health Act, and so they did. And they took her up. They wanted her examined by a psychiatrist. He said she was not suicidal, that she was not a risk to herself or others, and he sent her home. So that was the first thing. We thought, you know, she had too much to drink. She was just spouting off, which, you know, she's not the first person to have done that. So then the second incident was a few weeks later. That summer, she had broken up with a boyfriend who she had gone out with for probably 3 or 4 years. She was very upset about it. And she, again, had a little bit too much to drink. She was at home at the time. She was on the phone talking to the ex-boyfriend. They were arguing. She wanted him to come over. He didn't want to come over. And finally she said to him, if you don't come over, I'm going to kill myself. Thinking that he would come over, he didn't come over. He phoned 911. So I got home, the police were there, they told me that since she had said she was going to kill herself, that they wanted to take her up again to the hospital, and that they were going to take her up there under the Mental Health Act. So they took her up to the hospital. They actually waited for her while the psychiatrist examined her. The psychiatrist talked to her for quite a while, said that she was not suicidal, that she was not a risk to herself or others, that she was very intoxicated, and he told the police officers, just take her home, she needs to sleep it off. Which they brought her home, the same police officers that took her up, so they knew that she was not, they knew what he had said. They brought her home. When they got her home, we were there and I talked to them. I said at that point, you know, she was going to be starting in nursing, and I said, we're concerned, you know, because is this going to go down on, she has to have this vulnerable sector. Oh no, not a problem. It's under the Mental Health Act. Nothing goes on under the Mental Health Act. And besides, he said she has not been charged with anything. There are no criminal charges. We're not charging her. We basically took her up there just to make sure for her own safety. So, and then 3 years later, this turns up. You know, we were just shocked. Also, we found out that there were these guidelines that were set out by the Ontario Chiefs of Police. And they do say that they can put suicide attempts down. But they specifically say that they are only supposed to include suicide attempts that are actual attempts. It says right in it that they should not put anything that's just a verbal threat, which our daughter was a verbal threat. It was a verbal threat when she was intoxicated. She didn't swallow pills. She didn't slash her wrists. She didn't jump in front of a train. It was just a verbal threat when she was intoxicated. She said something wrong to the wrong person at the wrong time, and they were putting it.
So they said, well, you can appeal it. So we went to a lawyer and presented the facts, and this lawyer said, well, this shouldn't be a problem, you know. I mean, she's a straight-A student. She's got letters of congratulations from the dean. She hasn't done anything since back then. She had been seeing her psychiatrist for an anxiety disorder, and he was willing to write a letter saying that she was not a risk.
He knew her very, very well. She'd seen him for over 10 years. He's very, very well known. He's very well respected. He knows her. But would they listen to his opinion? No. They just said, no, we're not taking it off. They would rather go on the opinion of a police officer who had been in contact with her for, you know, and even the psychiatrist at the hospital. They knew that the psychiatrist said, no, she's not a risk. She's drunk. So the lawyer said to us, you know, he realized at that point this is a lot more involved. And he said that we should go to a group of lawyers in Toronto. He said they've had more experience. But he said to us, you know, they're expensive. And they were. They were very, very expensive. And, you know, a lot of people, that would have been it, because it was very, very expensive. And when we went and saw this other group of lawyers, they said to us, you know, this is much more involved, and it's, you know, it's difficult. And even since we'd already put in the first appeal, they said, you know, there's a very good chance they'll say no. Each police force actually does it differently. And they said, you know, even though there's these guidelines that are set out, it's up to the individual police force. Number one, if they want to follow the guidelines, and if they do, they can interpret them any way that they want it to.
It's so arbitrary. And we found out from our lawyers that when we make this appeal, it doesn't go to some appeal court or whatever. It goes to the very same people that made the original decision. They have to decide they made a mistake. They can decide, well, let's put it on. Like, it's her whole future is based on this one group people in this one municipality in Ontario. If she moved, it would have been a different group of people. It's not consistent.
The second group of lawyers put in a second appeal for us. They also included that the university did not want that information. So the police services came back and said that they had decided that at that point in time that they would take off those two incidents, but they said, told our daughter, you know, we won't guarantee that we're going to leave it off. We can put it on at any point that we want in the future, which sort of leaves her every time, you know, she has to get one, she doesn't know. Is this going to be the time that they decide? You know, it's really up to the individual who's doing it. And, you know, was able to go back and finish her university. You know, she actually graduated cum laude, one of the top in her class. She's out, she's able to work, but she would like to go on and continue her university. She'd like to go back and become a nurse practitioner, but as she says, you know, it's a really long course, and she'd have to stop working. It would be very, very expensive. She could get halfway or three quarters of the way through, and they could just decide, no, we're going to put it back on. So right now, she just figures she can't take the risk financially.
Yeah, one of the lawyers, I think, half jokingly said, you know, really, it could have been easier if she'd been charged, because then we could have gone and maybe, with all this information, gone for a pardon. And, you know, it could have been done. But with this, there's no other recourse. I think the whole idea of the vulnerable sector check is really to protect people, and mostly against, I think, sexual offenders. I think that's what the intent is. And they've thrown this broad net that's capturing people that they shouldn't. I mean, you know, you try to protect our children, but who protects our children from this? I mean, you know, you're a young person and you do something foolish and you say something foolish to a police officer, and that could affect the rest of your life. You know, closing the doors on so many different careers. And the police officers that we talked to didn't know. They thought, you know, we didn't charge her. We're just being careful. She's fine. If I were hiring somebody and I needed to get a vulnerable sector check on them and I saw the phrase violent and aggressive behavior, I never would have even thought that this is the Mental Health Act and that somebody was intoxicated and said they'd like to kill themselves and then they were released. I would think it was violent and aggressive. And I wouldn't go beyond all this, you know, to the next level to find out, oh, well, no, really, it's not that bad. I would just stop and I'd hire somebody else. I think, you know, general public, which would have been us before, you know, you hear, okay, you have to have a vulnerable sector check to work in these certain areas, and your first thought is, well, good. I think if they understood the real details and how it could affect almost anybody and change your life, you know, I don't think that people understand that. We didn't know this until it happened to us, and we started looking, and the more we found out, the more shocked we were.